89.3'te Radyo Student Ljubljana'yı dinliyorsunuz. Sizlere berrak bir ses ve berrak bir görüntü diliyoruz. Radyo Student Ljubljana, Rojava Devrimi ile anarşist dayanışmayı destekliyor.
Onaj specifični dobri stari srpsko-hrvatski koji postoji samo za slovenački pokret. To je zapravo, ja mislim, jezik i stare Jugoslavije, slovenačke nomenklature, birokratije u Beogradu. Tako da.
Bratstvo i jedinstvo je završeno, vreme je da se upoznamo, se pravi bratstvo i jedinstvo je končano, čast je da se spoznamo, jer mislim da je to demagogija.
Recep in Fethullah na Balkanu. Dobrodošli v prvi od dveh oddaj o vplivih turških državnih in paradržavnih struktur na Balkanu. Danes se bomo dotaknili zgodovinskega procesa z konca 20. in začetka 21. stoletja, ko je Turčija kot edina legitimna naslednica Osmanskega cesarstva pozornost ponovno usmerila na Balkan. Njeni sultanski predniki so bili namreč na prehodnem polotoku, ki je v srednjeveškem svetu povezoval zahod z vzhodom. Več kot pol stoletja daleč najmočnejša sila, tako da je bil skoraj da celoten Balkan del Osmanskega imperija. Govorili bomo o ideoloških legitimacijah in pragmatičnih taktikah turške prisotnosti na Balkanu. V drugi oddaji, ki bo na valovih Radija Študent prihodnjo sredo ob 21. bomo novi turški imperializem na Balkanu konkretizirali na primerih Bosne, Bolgarije in Srbije. Republika Turčija, ki jo je Mustafa Kemal Atatürk ustanovil v začetku 20. let prejšnjega stoletja, je kljub sekularizaciji in pozahodnjenju družbe podedovala dobršen del zapuščine Osmanskega cesarstva. Ni pa podedovala tega, kar bi si današnji turški predsednik Recep Tayyip Erdogan, ki ima močne imperialistične apetite, najbolj želel. Ni podedovala vseh ozemlji, ki so bila nekdaj pod osmansko oblastjo. Vendar je, kot meni Mehmet Ugur Ekinči, raziskovalec pri ankarski fundaciji SETA, ki je blizu Erdoganu, obojestranska želja po tesnih odnosih med Turčijo in balkanskimi državami obstajala tudi po razpadu osmanskega cesarstva v 20. in 30. letih.
As we know, the history of Turkey and the Balkans has a lot in common. For centuries, the Ottoman Empire was ruling major part of the Balkan region, the peninsula. And after the foundation of the Republic, Turkey kept diplomatic relations with all Balkan countries. Actually, it's interesting that at the moment that the Balkan states became independent during the Ottoman times, diplomatic relations were established. So the Ottoman Empire was also keen to maintain good diplomatic relations with the Balkans, and the Republic continued this. And especially during the 1930s, there were serious initiatives from Turkey and some Balkan countries to establish a permanent regional organization for cooperation in various areas, primarily economic, but it was something like a union, a Balkan union. But it did not materialize because of the outbreak of the Second World War. And after the Second World War, we know that there was this Iron Curtain, so there was ideological divisions between Turkey and the Balkans, and this was an obstacle for developing strong relations between governments and also economic relations as well. Even so, there were attempts, especially with Tito and Turkey's leaders during those times, from 1960s onwards, and between Turkey and Romania during 1980s. Turkey wanted to develop regional cooperation during those times, but the international rivalries and the Cold War didn't make it very possible. I mean, it didn't develop beyond a certain level.
Po koncu vojaške vladavine leta 1983, ki je v imenu branjenja turškega sekularizma tri leta prej izvedla državni udar, je na oblast v Turčiji prišel Turgut Uzal. Turški oblastniki so se v 80-ih začeli zavedati, da se mora zunanja politika države usmerjati tudi na druge konce sveta, ne zgolj proti Združenim državam Amerike in zahodnoevropskim državam. Zaradi svoje geografske bližine in zgodovinske povezanosti je bil prav Balkan najbolj priročna odločitev za širjenje turškega vpliva. Kot pojasnjuje zgodovinar in politolog Univerze v Strasbourgu Samim Akgunil, se je takrat začelo govoriti o ideji tako imenovanega izgubljenega Balkana.
The interest of Turkish foreign policy on the Balkans started in 1980s. After a huge gap between 1920s and 1980s, where specifically the Soviet regimes have been settled in the region, in 1980s there is a shift in the Turkish foreign policy to become more engaged in other parts of the world other than the West, Western Europe and the United States of America. And one of the targets of this first discourse in 1980s, when Turgut Özal became first prime minister, then president of the republic, was precisely specifically the Balkans. And we could see a lot of works, newspapers, television series, documentaries on the lost Balkans. This idea was very interesting because we are at the beginning of a neo-Ottomanist view of the foreign policy. This lost Balkans discourse started in the 1980s. Then, of course, you are right. After 1990s, after the collapse of the bipolar world, when these Balkan states and nations get free, it was seen by the Turkish foreign policy as a new market, not only commercial or economic market, but also a political and identity market. And that is why that in the 1990s, we see timidly Turkish ideological tools like schools, but also religion, of course, entering in the Balkan countries. It gets very accelerated when the Islamist nationalists came to the power, AKP, after 2002. And we may say that the last two decades, the Balkans, the entire Balkans, but specifically where there are Muslim and or Turkish minorities, it's a bit confusing, these countries became a real important investment, political investment center. And it is an ongoing process even today.
Po koncu hladne vojne in padcu železne zavese je Turčija izkoristila priložnost in svoje gospodarske moči usmerila proti Balkanu. V 90-ih letih je bilo povezovanje močno predvsem z Bolgarijo in Romunijo, ki sta še danes največji gospodarski partnerici Turčije na Balkanu.
In terms of politics, in terms of economy, this new world order created, as I said, challenges and opportunities. In terms of opportunities, Turkish businesses moved very fast to invest in some countries where economies are much more lucrative or maybe there was potential for profit and also stability. And these countries were primarily Romania and Bulgaria. And hundreds of Turkish entrepreneurs went into these countries and established businesses. And still today, Turkey's primary economic partners in the Balkans is Bulgaria and primarily Romania. And there is a very big difference between Turkey's trade volume and investments in these two countries and those in the rest of the Balkans. Turkey's engagement with the Western Balkans went more slowly because of the problems in that part of the peninsula. There was primarily the war, and during the war, Turkey Well, in the beginning, Turkey wanted to support the territorial integrity of Yugoslavia, but it, I mean, it unfortunately didn't happen. So after the outbreak of the war, Turkey wanted to bring parties together, but it wasn't possible to bring Serbs at the table with Bosniaks and Croats. And the first initiative was to bring Bosniaks and Croats at the table for negotiations. So Turkey spent some effort for mediation. But during the conflicts, Turkey also supported the Bosniaks, which were the most vulnerable group during those times. And because of the war, Turkey-Serbia relations remained at a very, very bad situation. And that actually continued throughout the 1990s, up until the overthrow of Milosevic regime.
Gospodarsko in politično se je Turčija tako v zadnjem desetletju 20. stoletja približala Balkanu in s tem položila temelje za krepitev odnosov v prihodnosti. K temu so prispevale tudi vojne, ki so po razpadu Jugoslavije preplavile etnično in versko raznolik Balkan. Muslimanska solidarnost je v 90-ih, kljub 70-im letom sekularizma, ko je vojna potekala v večinsko muslimansko poseljeni Bosni in nato v Kosovu, ponovno vzplamtela. Vendar ideološka koncepta religije in skupne osmanske zapuščine, ko gre za Balkan, v Turčiji nista imela večjega vpliva. Vse dokler leta 2001 na oblast ni prišla Stranka za pravičnost in razvoj, krajše AKP in njen voditelj Recep Tayyip Erdogan. O tako imenovanem neo-osmanizmu ali neo-osmanskem načrtu se je začelo konkretneje govoriti šele po letu 2009, ko je turški minister za zunanje zadeve postal Ahmet Davutoglu. Davutoglu je zagovarjal, da mora Turčija svoj vpliv na nekdanjih osmanskih ozemljih obnoviti in se zunanjo politično usmeriti proti Balkanu. To namreč po njegovem ni bila pravica Turčije, temveč njena dolžnost.
It started with a book of Ahmet Davutoglu, who was the advisor of foreign policy of Turkish Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Then he became the Minister of Foreign Affairs, then he became Prime Minister, and then today he's in the opposition. This book was The Strategic Depth. In its book, he's a professor of international relations, Ahmet Davutoglu. Ahmet Davutoglu was explaining that the former Ottoman regions, post-Ottoman regions, including Balkans, but mainly Balkans, more than the Middle East, by the way, mainly Balkans, was in the interest of the Turkish foreign policy, not because it was the right of Turkey, but moreover, it was the duty of Turkey to get involved in Balkan politics. It is a kind of neo-colonialist discourse, if I may say. So this discourse of Ahmet Davutoglu, even though he's in opposition today, became, after 2010 approximately, the official foreign policy of the AKP. AKP saw the Balkans as a real playground and to try to construct, to build a kind of backstage of the Turkish foreign policy.
Turčija je pod Erdoganom skušala vpliv na Balkanu širiti predvsem prek dveh ideoloških orodij. Turška fundacija za sodelovanje in usklajevanje, krajše TIKA, je zadolžena za finančno pomoč, ki je največkrat namenjena gradnji in obnovi infrastrukture, predvsem osmanske. TIKA danes deluje v 150 državah po vsem svetu. Direktorat za verske zadeve, krajše Dijanet, deluje na celotnem Balkanu, tudi v državah, kjer večinsko prebivalstvo ni muslimansko. Dijanet je aktiven predvsem pri gradnji ali obnovi mošej in organiziranju islamskega izobraževanja. Akgunil pojasni, zakaj sta obe organizaciji zgolj orodji turškega imperializma.
Turkey wanted to play an important role and using AKP, using the apparatus, the ideological apparatus in the region, tried to be the main actor. This ideological apparatus involves Diyanet, which is the Administration of Religious Affairs, very active. You know that I am the executive editor of the Yearbook of Muslims in Europe, published by Brill. And each year we see that the reports coming from the Balkan countries
how Diyanet is very active in all the mosques and complexes and Kulia in all over the Balkans, not only Muslim majority, not only Bosnia or Albania or Kosovo, but also all over the Balkans, but also other ideological apparatuses. I'm thinking, for example, to TIKA, it's the Development Foundation helping financially the reconstructions of several buildings, including religious buildings and including former Ottoman buildings. For example, TIKA Tsoki, who is the official public building company, social building company, helping here in the Balkans. So you can see that AKP changed the policy not only with discourse, but also with specific tools, trying to become the big brother of the Balkans. It is a half success. It's not 100% success because of other other powers involved in the region, but it is not a complete failure either. If we could go to Macedonia, northern Macedonia, Albania, Kosovo, Bosnia-Herzegovina, of course, but also in other countries of the Balkans, including the Bulgaria or Serbia, for example, we can see that Turkish constructions, tradesmen, businessmen are present. They are there and they are almost included in the local economy and local life. So we can say that it is a half success and half failure, of course.
Na učinkovitost turške širitve na Balkan je pozitivno vplivalo tudi dejstvo, da se je po dolgem času eni stranki in enemu voditelju uspelo dolgo obdržati na oblasti. Ekinči pravi, da je politična stabilnost, torej daljše obdobje vladavine ene stranke, Turčiji omogočila, da je, predvsem na Zahodnem Balkanu, začela ustanavljati svoje institucije. TIKA je Turkom, razseljenim po Balkanu in ostalim muslimanom, zagotavljala tudi šolnine za šolanje v Turčiji.
From 2002 onwards, Turkish politics became much more stable, because before that there were a lot of short-lived coalition governments, which made long-term foreign policy strategies impossible. And also there were numerous economic crises experienced in Turkey during the 1990s and early 2000s. During the years 2000s, Turkish economy prospered, and there was also a political stability. So this enabled Turkey to increase its activism in foreign policy in all parts of the world, including the Balkans. So new embassies were opened, and in the Balkans we can talk about new offices of Turkish institutions. Like, for example, there is this famous official development institution, governmental institution called TIKA. And during the 2000s, TIKA opened new offices all over the Balkans, especially in the Western Balkans, which was actually needing more official development aid. So that was the reason. And new public diplomacy institutions were established in Turkey, like the Presidency for Turks Abroad and Related Communities. This is how it is called. So its area of interest is primarily Turks living abroad. And as you know, there are Turkish communities living in different Balkan countries. But that institution also provides scholarships to thousands of students, not only Turks abroad, but also Muslims abroad and non-Muslims too. So for about, well, maybe 15 years, thousands of Balkan students from all countries in the region received scholarships for higher education, for master's and PhD education in Turkey. And also there is this cultural diplomacy institution called Yunus Emre Institute, which was established again in the late 2000s. And now all over the Balkans, we can see its branches teaching Turkish language and Turkish culture.
TIKA Amerika in Diyanet nista bili prvi turški organizaciji, ki sta nudili pomoč in širili turški vpliv na Balkanu. Že v 80-ih in 90-ih letih je predvsem na Zahodnem Balkanu šole, časopise in verske prostore ustanavljalo gulenistično gibanje, imenovano po svojem začetniku in voditelju Fethullahu Gulenu. Gulenisti so začeli delovati v Anatoliji, kjer je sekularna turška država pozabila na pobožno, večinoma kmečko prebivalstvo. V gulenističnih šolah so se izobraževali številni kasnejši politiki in gospodarstveniki, kar je prispevalo k temu, da so gulenisti širili svoj vpliv tudi izven meja Turčije. Erdogan je na oblast prišel tudi po zaslugi gulenističnih struktur, ki so ga podprle kot proti kemalističnega kandidata. Po letu 2000 je tako za guleniste nastopila zlata doba, ko so se razširili praktično po vsem svetu, kjer so odpirali šole in usposabljali nove kadre. Po protivladnih protestih v istambulskem parku Gezi leta 2013 in kasneje še bolj izrazito, pa je med Gulenom in Erdoganom prišlo do preloma, ki je dokončen postal leta 2016, ko je Erdogan Gulena obtožil poskusa državnega udara. Vsi obtoženi simpatiziranja z gulenizmom so bili izgnani iz države ali zaprti, gulenistično gibanje pa razglašeno za teroristično organizacijo. Balkanske države so gulenisti pogosto uporabljali kot odskočno desko za prodor v druge evropske države. V Severni Makedoniji so na primer gulenisti, potem ko so dobili dovoljenje za stalno prebivališče, odpirali trgovinice, ki so jih kasneje razširili in se povezovali z lokalnim prebivalstvom. Po postanku v Makedoniji so se nato s pridobljenim kapitalom podali na sever, najbolj pogosto v Nemčijo. Tudi na Balkanu je Erdogan želel popolnoma izničiti vpliv gulenistov in od lokalnih oblasti zahteval, da vse pripadnike gibanja izročijo Turčiji. Vendar, kot pojasni Akgunil, se to nikoli ni zares uresničilo. V veliki meri tudi zato, ker so se številni vplivni politiki balkanskih držav izobraževali prav v gulenističnih šolah. Te so tako odprte tudi danes, prav tako pa denimo v Severni Makedoniji še vedno izhaja gulenistični časopis Zaman, ki v Turčiji ni več pod nadzorom gulenistov. V Albaniji pa gulenisti celo še vedno nadzirajo glavne verske institucije, prav tako pa v državi še zmeraj deluje šola, imenovana po Turgutu Uzalu.
The Balkan region, not only Western Balkans, also Eastern and Southern, but less Greece, but Eastern Balkans also, were an important context in which Gulen movement was implemented since 1980s and 1990s. So this involvement of the Gulen movement of 1990s was accelerated enormously in 2000s when AKP came to power and took Gulenists as the main ally to protection of the bureaucracy and bureaucrats. And in that period, let's say between 1990s and 2010, we could see the Gulen-related schools, but also businesses, but also newspapers, for example, media, flourishing in the Western Balkans. And it's created a very interesting atmosphere, because in several countries, including Albania, for example, or including Kosovo, for example, the political elite and intellectual elite was educated in the Gulen related schools. And when, after 2013, there was a divorce in Turkey between Gulen movement and the AKP, and when this divorce transformed to a war, to a real war, after 2016, Turkey started to ask one by one these Balkanic countries to shut down the Gulen schools or to transfer them to a new school, public school network, Maarif schools, to get rid of the Gulen movement. And some of the countries are follow the Turkish will, not all of the countries, I won't mention any country here, not all the countries, because they're specifically the elite, the political elite, to which Turkey government was asking to shut down the Gulen schools, were resulting from Gulen-related schools. Today we may say that Gulen movement is much less present in the Balkans, of course. It is not the golden age of 1990s or 2000s, of course, But the annihilation of the Gulen movement is not complete either in the Western Balkans. There are still some Gulen-related schools. There are still some Gulen-related businessmen working in the Western Balkans. So we could say that the pressure of the Turkey served somehow to weaken the Gulen movement, but not to kill the Gulen movement.
Ko govorimo o turških upadih vplivih na Balkanu, moramo tako ločevati med gospodarskim vplivom na ravni državnega sodelovanja na eni strani in pa organizacijami in gibanji, ki delujejo z lokalnim prebivalstvom na drugi. Predvsem je to pomembno, ko govorimo o Erdoganu, ki si je na svoji politični poti nakopal nešteto sovražnikov tako doma kot v tujini. Veliko ljudi tudi na Balkanu ne podpira turške vladne elite in večine njenih potez, vendar so po drugi strani podporniki turške države, ki nudi podporo muslimanom v regiji. Turčija je bila v 90-ih letih najmočneje povezana z Bolgarijo in Romunijo. Razlog za to je predvsem v tem, da je na Zahodnem Balkanu skoraj celotno desetletje potekala vojna. Kljub temu, da je Vzhodni Balkan še vedno gospodarsko bolj vezan na Turčijo, se je tudi po letu 2000 turški gospodarski vpliv širil v države nekdanje Jugoslavije.
Turkey's economic relations in the Balkan Peninsula has been the strongest in Romania. And then Bulgaria comes, and Greece, the relations with Greece has been fluctuating. So sometimes Turkish investments went into Greece, but they have remained quite limited because of remaining political problems. So when we come to the Western Balkans, during the 1990s, Turkey's economic relations with the region was very limited because of the war, and also the region had its own problems, political and economic problems. And Turkish economy had its problems as well. But over the 2000s, as Turkish economy strengthened and the Balkan economy strengthened as well, new searches for economic cooperation were made mutually because Turkish businesses were looking for investments and Turkey was looking for markets. But at the same time, Balkans was looking for investments as well. And still, all countries from the Balkans, their officials constantly declare that they want Turkish businesses to come in. The signing of agreements, agreements including free trade agreements and taxation agreements, made a huge impact from the 2000s onwards. And today, Turkish investments in the Western Balkans is also increasing. It's increasing at a faster pace than in Romania and Bulgaria. And I should also mention that Turkey's investments in and also bilateral trade with Croatia and Slovenia has shown a significant increase in the last few years. But their volume is still negligible compared to the volume of trade and Turkish investments in Bulgaria and Romania. When we look at sectors, contracting sectors is one of the sectors is Turkish businesses is quite active. So in almost all Balkan countries, there are Turkish contractors building roads and buildings. In Slovenia, there is this railroad, as we know, the tunnel. So contracting sector is construction sector is one of the leading sectors. But also in some countries, telecommunication, banking in all Western Balkan countries, there are Turkish-owned banks. Telecommunication, as I mentioned, mining and industry, industrial sectors. For example, in Bulgaria, there is a very sizable glass factory. In Serbia, there is a bicycle and a textile factory. We can increase these. In Kosovo, airport is the Pristina airport is being run by a Turkish company. So there are such big investments, but there are also numerous, maybe thousands of small entrepreneurs running all over the Balkans. So this is not kind of a economic strategy focusing on only certain parts of the Balkans or only certain sectors, but there is a variety here. But I think the leading sector in the Balkans has been construction.
V nasprotju z bližnjevzhodnimi sosedami Balkan za Turčijo predstavlja stabilnost, kar je za gospodarstvo sodelovanje, če odštejemo orožarsko industrijo in Združene države Amerike, vedno dobrodošlo. Predvsem pa po arabski pomladi leta 2011, ko je bližnji vzhod zajel val protestov, ki so ponekod rezultirali tudi v več let trajajočih vojnah, se je Turčija obrnila proti Balkanu.
I have to mention the stability in the region as a very strong permissive cause, creating a very suitable atmosphere for Turkey to increase its engagements in terms of economic engagements, cultural and social engagements. So this is one of the arguments that I have been repeating in my publications for the last 10 years, because in other regions around it, Turkey's relations have been quite strained with some countries, but Turkey's relations with Balkan countries have been quite on good terms, quite stable. So this is very much related to stability, the maintenance of peace and stability in the region. So I am not expecting any disruption, a serious disruption of peace and stability in the Balkans, but if it happens, then the situation may force Turkey to take sides, and then maybe the relations with Turkey in some Balkan countries will deteriorate. And that's why actually Turkey always wants stability and peace prevail in the region. So there will be more options for Turkey and Turkish businesses to engage with the region. So once stability, the region becomes a more fertile ground for more Turkish presence.
Turčija je na Balkanu prisotna predvsem v gradbeništvu. Poleg financiranja izgradnje ali obnove mošej so turška podjetja sodelovala tudi pri gradnji cest. Pred dvema letoma je prišlo do dogovora za izgradnjo avtoceste med Sarajevom in Beogradom, ki pa zaenkrat še ni uresničen.
First of all, Turkey became present in the Western Balkans as public sphere. Public companies, Turkey, SICA, electricity company, oil company, gas company. So the state, Turkish state, was involved in this region. This is the first thing. But also, since 1990s, and it has been accelerated in 2000, the first decade of 2000, some private sector also was encouraged by the Turkish government to enter in this market. I remember in 2000, between 2000 and 2010, for example, several Gulen-related companies were involved in the Western Balkans with the help, with the encouragement of the Turkish government. Not only schools, of course, schools, but not only schools, other businessmen also. During the same period, several Turkish businessmen entered in the Western Balkans, established some companies, some small companies, for example, to escape, you will laugh, but to escape the military service in Turkey. Those who work at least 3 years outside of Turkey are exempted from the military service. So the Western Balkans became a field of businesses, of Turkish businessmen founding their companies and escaping the military service. And then these companies, some of these companies became real companies. Today, walking in several streets of the Western Balkan cities, you can see these businesses, it became visible. So we can say that today in 2023, both at public and private level in the Western Balkan, Turkey are present. It's not the only state which is present, of course. There are other powers also, but it is present and it is visible. I think that Turkey sees in the Western Balkans a junction region between Europe, inaccessible Europe, inaccessible European market, and the East, the Orient, which couldn't be dominated by the Turkish foreign policy, unlike the will of the Turkish president to become the leader of the Middle East, it is a failure. It's 100% failure. But here in the Western Balkans, it is an intermediary market. That is why economically it's also a half success.
Turčija na Balkanu išče poleg vsega drugega tudi poti za približevanje Evropski uniji. Za konec poudarimo še, da neo-osmanski plan ne obsega zgolj Balkana, temveč vsa območja nekdanjega cesarstva. V severni Siriji in severnem Iraku Erdogan ne skriva želje, da bi regiji priključil Turčiji, zato tudi tam turška vojska s pomočjo islamističnih milic že izvaja operacije. To seveda ne pomeni, da bo Erdogan kaj kmalu v Beograd ali Sarajevo začel pošiljati brezpilotne letalnike, je pa to indikator, da edini pravi sultan 21. stoletja neo-osmanski načrt jemlje popolnoma resno. Kljub temu, da je Balkan za zahodne evropejce še vedno tisti eksotični drugi, mora Turčija tu uporabljati bolj diplomatske metode kot na Bližnjem vzhodu. Z Erdoganom in Gulenom se je med Solunom in Beogradom sprehajal Fin.
Onaj specifični, dobri, stari, srpsko-hrvatski, koji postoji samo za slovenački pogled. To je zapravo, ja mislim, jezik iz stare Jugoslavije, slovenačke nomenklature, birokratije u Beogradu. Tako da.
Bratstvo i jedinstvo je završeno, vreme je da se upoznamo, se pravi bratstvo i jedinstvo je končano, čast je da se spoznamo, ja mislim da je to demagogija.